The Word of Mouth podcast is brought to you by
Dartmouth Hitchcock. Imagine nationally ranked healthcare in your community.
With convenient locations throughout northern New England.
World-class providers are closer than you think. Visit dartmouthhitchcock.org to learn more.
Dartmouth Hitchcock is here.
Word of Mouth.
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 Word of
Mouth.
The internet is not something that you just dump something on. It's a series of tubes. Tubes.
This is Word of Mouth from NHPR. I'm Virginia Prescott. And it is time for A Series of Tubes, our regular run-through of the latest tech stories with Rob Fleischman. He's principal engineer at Akamai Technologies and our chief explainer of all things Wired. Hello, Rob.
Hey, Virginia. Great to be here.
Well, we've got a fantastic occasion here. You've been on the show so many times before, we've decided to make it a regular thing.
I am honored to be here.
Well, we are so glad to have you because there are so many things that need to be explained. Beginning with the first order of business here. Now, this is Elon Musk. He's the billionaire founder of SpaceX and Tesla.
You bet.
Now, he told an audience, this was at a government summit in Dubai, I'm thinking, that humans must merge with machines.
You're right.
What does he mean?
Well, I think Elon, first of all, terrific visionary, SpaceX, Tesla, you know, just he's pushing the envelope in everything he does.
I'll say.
And, you know, I think he's talking about how we're mostly using keyboards and tablets and phones, and our fingers are sort of slow. So he's saying, wow, you know, to really enable the future, we sort of have to merge with computers. And sounds a little scary, but I think Elon forgets something, that, you know, our eyes are really great at taking in information, and we're making a lot of great advances in virtual reality. So I think that that direction is probably the most probable way we'll be talking with computers, you know, and people start talking about things like cyborgs and androids and robots and all these scary future things. But I think it's, you know, I think we're already heading in that direction where we're going to be using VR headsets to interact with the world and our jobs.
Okay. I have to stop you, though, because I don't really know the difference between a cyborg, an android, and a robot.
Sure. Okay. So a robot is a mechanical thing, right? I mean, you can imagine robots painting your cars, right?
Probably making our cars.
That's right. Well, they do. They make all our cars, right? Most things are robots these days. But so a robot is just a generic mechanical device that does something. An android is a mechanical device that looks like a human. So if you remember Star Trek, you know, I don't want to date myself too much, but there was an android called Data, right? He wasn't a human. He was a robot, but he looked like a person, acted like a person. So that's really what the word android means. And then cyborg is, you know, that's the mix, right? That's a human with computer enhancements or robotic enhancements.
It might be somebody who's, you know, has some sort of overlay computer, digital overlay on their eyes so they can see through things or see,
Or it could be even much less sinister than that. I mean, how about a handicapped person who has some robotic legs, right? That could be cyborg, right?
Yeah, but you do think cyborg sinister.
Yeah, you do, because you think it's an embedded evil device that takes over our world, you know? And will strapping on a VR headset, does that turn you into a cyborg? I don't know. Maybe we'll argue about that some other time.
So some people are scratching their head and saying, okay, what is Elon Musk talking about? You don't think he's crazy?
No, I don't think he's crazy. I think he's, you know, trying to open our eyes here, and I think there's a great direction for us to go. I think that we have a terrific future in interacting faster and better with machines.
Well, so far, the SpaceX record for Elon Musk's organization, a little mixed, but they did launch a rocket from the Kennedy Space Center over this past weekend. Now, this has been out of use since the shuttles were retired. Is this, we're calling this a victory for the space industry?
Right. So he did his Falcon 9 rocket, I believe, the Dragon module he launched. And yes, first commercial launch from Cape Canaveral. Pad 39A, where the Apollo moon rockets went off and the space shuttle was launched. So, you know, great PR event. You know, a lot of people are mixed on SpaceX. Some people feel bad. They say, hey, you know, we're giving millions and millions, billions of dollars to companies like SpaceX instead of keeping it in the NASA program.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm a bit more optimistic about it. Why? Because NASA has like 24 research facilities spread through every congressman's district, right? Every one of these research facilities costs tens of millions of dollars a year to run. You can never close any of them. It's highly inefficient. Everything NASA does costs 100 times what it would take a commercial entity to do. So although we're giving billions of dollars to SpaceX and others, that's pennies compared to what it would cost if we did it ourselves, right? Because commercial entities have to worry about things like profit and efficiency. They don't have employees for life that never get fired. They don't have congressmen and senators preserving these high-paid jobs in their districts. So I'm actually kind of bullish on SpaceX. I think it'll really accelerate our space race, if you will, exploration and cutting costs down. Clearly, this Dragon module is reusable, right? So that's going to be a huge savings for delivering stuff to the space station.
Okay. All right. So we're moving on to CES. Now, this is the Consumer Electronics Show. I'm sure people have heard about it, where we saw this year the unveiling of the first manned drone. I'm doing that in little quotation marks.
Manned drone. New words. Sorry.
Well, which sounds like, it looks like one of those quadcopters that hobbyist photographers use, right? We've seen a lot of those. But big enough to put a passenger inside. Which brings us to a semantic question.
Yes.
If you can put a person in it, is it still a drone or is it just an aircraft?
Oh my goodness, we're really stretching the words here. So let's go back to basics. Okay, drones, right? Everyone's heard the word.
I thought that was an unmanned aerial vehicle or something.
Right, well, so the word drone, what it really means is remote controlled or pilotless aircraft. Okay, so there's no pilot. There's no person sitting in the thing driving it, right? That's a drone. It's remote controlled. So now you have something where, well, wait a minute. We take a drone, we put a person in it. So what does that mean? Well, of course, it's an aircraft, right? Maybe it's a manned drone, right? It's still remote controlled. Someone else is controlling it, saying where it goes, but it's got a passenger, right? So we could call that a manned drone.
Or semantically, we could call it a personed drone.
That's true. But the other thing to think about is, there's another word, autonomous or autonomous drones, right? That means that not only is the drone remote controlled, but it's controlled by a computer, right? So when we were watching Lady Gaga's Super Bowl halftime show, and we had all those drones up in the air, right? Those were autonomous drones, right? There weren't individual people with joysticks controlling the hundreds of drones. Those were all controlled by software. And so now we have drones, remote controlled, pilotless, and we have autonomous drones, which are not only remote controlled, but controlled by a computer.
I don't know that I would want to be flying a drone or sitting in a drone, rather, in this context, and having a computer taking care of it for me. I mean, wouldn't you want some agency?
Well, I mean, you feel fine about flying on Southwest and JetBlue and American and Delta and all those guys, right? Do you think the pilot's controlling it the whole time, or do you think maybe there's an autopilot working for you there, Virginia?
You're really destroying my whole vacation plans right now.
Just saying.
But it also brings up this kind of idea of driverless cars. I mean, this is the same sort of concept, right?
Exactly. I mean, you know, we're seeing massive advancements in driverless cars, right? And it's driven by, I think, a couple things. One is artificial intelligence, which is, of course, driven by computer processing speed. So 10 years ago, we just didn't have computers that could process data fast enough to do any of this kind of stuff. And now we do. So you couple this computer speed with really three things. Cameras, right? Really good cameras that are small and low power and lots of them. Put them all around your car. GPS for accurate location, speed information, right? Couple that with map technology. And even some are using LIDAR, which is sort of like lasers, like radar with light. So you combine those three technologies together and you feed that into a computer. And folks like Google even have history where they say, well, you know, Virginia just drove down that road 2 minutes ago and I have this data. So now I have the Virginia's old data plus new data. And you can make a lot of great conclusions and drive cars really safely. The performance record of these cars is compelling. You know, if you go and look at crashes per mile, those kind of things, they're just so much safer than us, right? They don't get tired.
Well, they have to go the speed limit.
Right. They have to go the speed. They go the speed limit, right? They don't break rules. They don't text on their phone. They don't have a few drinks.
It is a series of tubes. It's our run through of the latest technology stories with Rob Fleischman, who is our chief explainer of all things Wired. Well, now Ford's investing $1 billion in this startup called Argo AI. Now, the plan announcement is getting autonomous vehicle on the road by 2021. Is that doable?
You know, I think it is. I really do. I think that this investment...
Well, you are just an optimist all the way
today. I'm an optimist today. I think so. And I think that Ford's being really smart, right? So Ford is, you know, I mean, they're certainly an advanced company, but they're viewed as a brick and mortar, you know, we make cars, right? But this is a smart move. They're investing in a company founded by Google and Uber founders. So people right in the right spot. You know, the folks behind this are, you know, in the nexus of self-driving cars. They know the technology And Ford really wants a leg up. They want to be in this business. They don't want to be eclipsed by a Tesla or any of the other manufacturers like Toyota and others that are investing heavily in the space.
Okay, Rob, before we let you go on this maiden voyage of a series of tubes, this is the part where you get to do a little bit of very elementary tech education for those of us
sure.
who are not engineers.
Sure.
We're going to call this Explain It Like I'm 10. Okay? So 10, we're getting really broad. The internet. What's the internet?
The timing is great, Virginia. So tomorrow I'm actually going into
because this internet thing is really going to be big.
That's right. Turns out the internet's a fad. It's like the Beanie Babies. You know, it's a series of tubes, according to our intro song. But tomorrow I'm heading into my local elementary school as part of the STEM education program to actually talk about being an internet infrastructure engineer.
Oh, good for you. That's
great. I'll be explaining it to them as well. So I guess I would start by talking about the internet in four things: packets, addresses, names, and protocols. So let's go through that. So the internet, doesn't really work like taking a book and handing it to your friend or reading it to them. It works on packets. So if I were to transmit a book across the internet, I would take the book and tear off all the pages one by one and start sending the pages out. And the pages would flow through the internet all kinds of different ways. They all wouldn't be one by one behind each other. They would take different routes, just like driving from Boston to California. There are many roads you can take. And those pages would take all kinds of different roads getting to California. And when they arrived at California, they would be put back together in order. Maybe some pages would be missing and would need to be retransmitted, right? But they would be assembled back in order into a book for us to look at. So the internet works on packets, little pieces of information. Whatever you send, it breaks up and sends across. So that's really different than what people think. It's, in terms of a series of tubes, well, not really. It's more like a flurry of packets being pushed around. The second thing to think about when you're talking about the internet is addresses. Everything on the internet has an address. People call them IP addresses or internet protocol addresses. So every endpoint, every device on the internet has an address. And what information, these packets like we were talked about, are sent from address to address to address, handed off from location to location to location until they reach their destination. And then when responses are sent, it's the same way. The packets flow backwards from address to address to address and finally to the destination.
Not necessarily even the same addresses.
That's right. They may be different paths through the network. And by the way, that's by design. The internet is supposed to be resilient. When some part of it blows up or is down for some reason, the packets just flow around the problem. And that's by design. It's a great design that's been around since the very beginning. The next thing is names, which is, when you go to www.google.com, you can't really go to a name, right? That name needs to be translated into what? An address, right? So that's done via a system on the internet called DNS, or the Domain Name System. So when your application, your web browser or your app wants to connect to youtube.com, the first thing it does is it says, hey, I need to take youtube.com. Please give me the address for that. And then that question's asked all the time. That's one of the core facilities of the internet, translating names into addresses. And then once you have the address, guess what? Your packets can flow. And then finally, the last thing that I would say is an introduction to the internet is what I call protocols. And protocols are very much like you picking up the phone. You pick up the phone, you say hello, right? That's just what you say. And the internet is all about protocols. And computers, unlike humans, are not quite so adaptable to changes in the protocol. So when you're sending a piece of mail, there's a protocol, what you send first, what you send second, what you get acknowledged. There are protocols for instant messaging. There are protocols for video, protocols for file transfer. There are hundreds of protocols. And the internet is just chock full of them for all different applications. So again, at the high level, when you think about the internet, it's all about packets. It's all about sending those packets to addresses. It's all about getting names for those addresses. And finally, it's about how machines communicate with each other using protocols.
Oh, protocols is kind of nice because it's like etiquette.
It's like, exactly like etiquette.
This is how you behave.
Exactly.
Okay, I think this was a good warm-up for your fifth grade class or whatever level.
I'll do some better pictures.
Well, we just want to know about Snapchat now. That's what they're going to be.
That's right. Well, maybe that'll be part two.
Rob Fleischman, he's principal engineer at Akamai Technologies and our chief explainer of a series of tubes. What do you think, Rob?
Great being here, Virginia.
I think
you guys
stick.
Nailed it.
For many of us, the desire for a little time alone is an unfulfilled dream. For the elderly matriarch at the center of the children's book, Leave Me Alone, the need for a little peace and quiet to get some practical knitting done inspires an epic quest that takes her to the ends of the earth and beyond. Neither grizzly bears nor the laws of physics will stand in the way of this granny's knitting. Vera Brogel is the author and illustrator of Leave Me Alone, which received a Caldecott honor this year. And Vera, welcome to Word of Mouth.
Hi, Virginia. It's great to be here.
What was the inspiration for the grandmother who's at the center of this story?
She's pretty much me in a few years, in a lot of years.
Do you have a lot of kids?
I don't have a lot of kids, but I have a lot of yarn. I definitely appreciate my privacy.
Well, your author bio says that you have knit 22 sweaters. Wishing you could be alone to knit a little bit more, maybe?
Now I can do it all that I want. I've left my animation job to make children's books full-time, so I'm pretty much alone in my house all day, and it's perfect.
Well, this reads like an old-fashioned folktale and looks a little like an old-fashioned folktale. Are there folktales which inspired you?
I grew up reading Russian fairy tales. That's where I was born, that was definitely a big inspiration for this book. The work of Ivan Bilibin very directly influenced the cover. And that's what I read as a child, and that's what I wanted to make for my first book.
That explains her drinking a little tea from the samovar before she goes out on her journey.
Absolutely.
Did your experience, though, as a graphic novelist also help you, or is this process very different?
It's very different. The books are much shorter, maybe a fifth of the length, but every page is much more refined and carefully edited, and it was full color painting instead of the line drawing that I do for comics.
I'm wondering about the editing. You know, it's challenging, I think, to make a children's book that's funny for children and adults who have to read it over and over and over again. And there are a lot of jokes to discover in the images. There's a moment when she pokes a giant bear in the nose, and on the next page, the bear touches its nose tenderly. You know, how did you figure out which jokes worked and which didn't?
Well, I don't have children of my own, but I do have access to the children of others. So there were many times where I would print a copy of the book out and bring it to a friend's house and read it to their elementary school children and see how it went over, if they started to get bored or if they laughed. And that was very, very helpful.
So what did you cut out? You want to share with us the deep cuts?
The deep cuts consisted of a sequence with some chipmunks who were also annoying. And my wonderful editor, Connie, pointed out that that was a bit similar to a lot of the other animals. And would we miss the chipmunks if they were gone? And no, I don't think anybody did.
Yeah, I think it's pretty complete. She treks up a mountain. She's out in the woods. She meets bear. She meets dancing goats. A number of reviews for the book suggest reading it out loud to groups. Did you realize that when you were working on it or write it with that presentation in mind?
Yeah, for sure. There's sort of comic book balloons throughout the book where the old lady yells, "Leave me alone." And I realized pretty quickly that was going to be a big component of reading it aloud. And I thought that might be either really fun for kids and parents or really terrible for parents. I wasn't really sure. But it seems to have gone over pretty well.
How would you read it?
I would yell it as loud as I could.
Just having it on my desk has been kind of handy. I can hold it up.
Just prop it up at your cubicle entrance or something.
Well, Vera, congratulations, and thank you for speaking with us.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
Vera Brogel, she is the author and illustrator of the graphic novel Anya's Ghost, as well as the Caldecott honored children's picture book, Leave Me Alone. You'll find more information on her work at our website, wordofmouthradio.org. Thank you.